This is Fresh Air. With Christmas and New Year's coming up, chances are there's some champagne in your future, and it might be your turn to buy it. So we've invited two experts to talk with us about taste and cost. Joshua Wesson and David Rosengarten edit the newsletter The Wine and Food Companion, and they co-wrote the book Red Wine with Fish, The New Art of Matching Food with Wine.
Do you mind if we open a bottle here?
Yeah. Pretty
just,
good.
Just kidding.
What's the difference between champagne and sparkling wine?
$10. Just kidding. Champagne gets its name from the region that it is produced in. Champagne is a place in France. It's also the name of the most famous wine that comes from that region. And any sparkling wine that is made in a champagne style outside of the region of Champagne has to be called sparkling wine. It can't be called champagne.
The French don't want them to call it that?
Right, it's their trademark. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is Josh says is true for France and is true for all the common market countries. Of course, there are other countries in the world who say we can call it whatever the heck we want to call
it. Like America.
Like America. And California sparkling wine is sometimes called champagne and sometimes not.
And I've had cold duck champagne, which is fine stuff.
So how do they get the bubbles in it?
Well, there are three ways you can put bubbles in champagne. Well, three ways you can put bubbles into wine. You can make it like Coca-Cola and just inject carbon dioxide in, and that's the way that that lovely champagne cold duck is fizzed. Or you can induce a process of fermentation in a bottle. You've probably seen the words naturally fermented in the bottle in a number of sparkling wine labels. And you actually turn a bottle into a little factory. You add yeast and sugar, and when yeast and sugar get together, they end up producing carbon dioxide and alcohol. If you keep a lid on things, then you have the carbon dioxide stuck in there, and that's the way that really good sparkling wines get their bubbles.
There's a third way as well, as Josh mentioned. It's called the Charmat method, and then they create this the second fermentation in a big tank, and then they put it in bottles later.
So besides the fermentation process, are there other differences between the cheaper and more expensive champagnes, or shall I say the more inexpensive and the more expensive champagnes?
Well, one thing that you pay a lot of money for is the luxury of having someone else age your wine for you. And a lot of champagne is aged for a fairly long period of time. And the longer that you keep a wine out of the buyer's hands, the more you have to pay the person who's selling the wine to you.
And also in answer to your question, another big difference is grape varieties. Mm-hmm. When champagne is made, real champagne, made in Champagne, France, it's made from three grape varieties, sometimes only one, sometimes two, but three go into it, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and another grape less well-known called Pinot Meunier. These grapes are high-class grapes, and they make very, very complex and very elegant wine.
What do you think of the inexpensive sparkling Spanish wines like Freixenet?
Well, I think that David and I don't believe in wines being good or bad because they are inexpensive or expensive. We think of wines in their place on a table next to food. And champagnes tend to go well with certain kinds of foods. And sparkly wines like Freixenet, sparkly wines from California, sparkling wines from areas outside of Champagne tend to go with other kinds of food. David and I love to serve champagne with very elegant and refined food that doesn't overwhelm the elegance and complexity of the champagne. But if we are sitting around and having some food that's a bit spicy, we would never serve champagne with it. We would always reach for a bottle of a Spanish sparkling wine because all of that complexity would get lost in the spice, and we like the roughness. In fact, the coarseness of a Spanish sparkling wine can be a benefit.
When you're buying champagne and the label says brut or extra dry, what does it mean?
Oh, man, that terminology is so confusing.
Only the French could come up with terminology that would leave people so fabulously confused that extra dry would actually mean something that's sweeter than brut. And in fact, that is the case. These words are designations of levels of sweetness in the sparkling wine or champagne. And what happens is if you are a champagne or a sparkling wine producer, you will decide right before you ship the wine out to the different places that it will go to how much sugar to add to the wine. You add it in the form of sugar that's been dissolved into a little bit of still wine, and then you dose the bottle, you put the cork on, and then you send it out. If you want to make a very, very dry sparkling wine or champagne, then you add very little sugar and you call it Brut. If you want to make it a bit sweeter, then you add a little bit more sugar and you label it extra dry. And in fact, there are even sweeter champagnes than extra dry. There are champagnes that taste very much like dessert wines, and they are labeled demi-sec or even sweeter than demi-sec,
Yes, and wish to point out that very often people open a bottle of champagne with dessert because it's a good point in the meal for the toast, and then they open a bottle of something that's labeled Brut, and it costs $30, and they're wasting their wine because with the dessert, the wine is going to get clobbered. You're not going to be able to taste it. It's going to taste like lemon juice with bubbles. So it's always a good idea to serve a sweeter champagne with dessert if you're toasting.
One of the things that drives us crazy is when we go to weddings and we see people wheel out huge wedding cakes, and then they serve a dry sparkling wine or a Brut champagne. David and I both keep a little bit of Domino sugar in our wallets. we call it Cristal Helper.
I can imagine what the hosts are thinking as you slip it in.
We're discreet.
Yeah. you guys write a lot about what kinds of wines go with what kinds of foods.
Yes.
What goes good with champagne?
More champagne.
Yeah,
more
really.
Champagne. Yes. Actually, we believe it or not, we've got a good answer to that question. We've got a few groups of foods that we like to serve with champagne. First of all, you notice that when you go to a meal in a fancy restaurant, very often you're served a little what they call amuse-bouche, something to amuse your mouth first before the serious food starts coming out. And very often a glass of champagne is offered with that. Furthermore, very often that amuse-bouche is something that's deep-fried. And I can't quite figure out why exactly, so don't ask me. But deep-fried foods and champagne go very, very well together. It's almost as if the bubbles sort of scrape any residual oil off the palate that comes from the deep-frying.
I've got a little bit of an idea of why that works. Champagnes and sparkling wines tend to be made from grapes that are fairly acidic. And when you have acidic grapes, you end up making acidic wine. And champagnes, being so acidic, tend to act like a McCullough chainsaw and cut right through all the grease of deep-fried items. It's a really nice contrast.
And so you can use it in that way as an aperitif, but Josh and I always champion high-low food matches and food and wine matches, and I think a great bottle of champagne and a picnic of southern fried chicken would be just fantastic.
I would go farther and say Chicken McNuggets,
yeah.
Because champagne is comparatively expensive, I think a lot of people assume you should eat it with expensive food like champagne and caviar, but you don't think
right.
Champagne and caviar go together very well.
Oh, that's our deep, dark secret.
Ball bearings filled with fish oil and salt.
Yes,
we're
going to
blow the lid on this caviar thing.
Caviar wishes, champagne nightmares.
David and I have, Petrosian has put a price on our heads for saying this, but in fact, we find that if you have a champagne that is slightly sweet, and a lot of champagnes have a little bit of sugar added to them, whether they're extra dry or even if they're labeled Brut, that little bit of sugar will bring out the fishiness in caviar, and that's the one thing that you don't want to do when you're eating a spoonful of caviar.
Do you have any recommendations of affordable champagnes?
Yeah, you know, there are a few good ones in the market these days. Not affordable champagnes, I'm afraid, strictly speaking champagne, but affordable sparkling wines.
Yes.
From France, there's a champagne that's in the market right now called Silver Cloud Blanc de Blanc. And it's from an area in France called Blanquette de Limoux, which is little known in the U.S. It costs about $7, and it's a very good champagne substitute. It doesn't have the complexity, but it's very light and crisp. Also, we were talking about Spain before, and in the northeast corner of Spain, they make a great deal of sparkling wine called Cava. And there's a very good one in the market right now from the big house Codorniu, the 1987 Blanc de Blanc, which sells for about $7 and has a little bit of that good grape in it, a little bit of Chardonnay, which I think helps to give it its class.
Can you recommend a champagne in the, say, $15 a bottle category? $15 to $20, something.
Something significant has happened in the Champagne region recently in France. They had a dispute between the people who grow grapes and the people who make wine out of them. And the upshot of this dispute is that champagne prices are going up. So the champagne bargain that you used to be able to find at $15 is soon going to be anywhere from $20 to $25. It's horrible, tragic news for champagne lovers, but these prices are seriously going up after January 1st.
Which region? So, this is the actual Champagne region?
This is the Champagne region of France, yes.
Wow.
So for people who want to buy champagne, now is really the time to stock up, because really in just a few weeks it's going to be over.
And the best value is to be had. If you really want a champagne, if you don't want to get a sparkling wine from elsewhere. Look for non-vintage Brut champagnes. Those are invariably the best values to come out of Champagne. And look for wines that come from smaller houses. The smaller the house, the less well-known, the less demand there is for the wine usually, and the better the price. And right now is the best time to go and look for champagnes because most retailers are heavily discounting sparkling wine and champagne for the holidays.
Two houses in Champagne, France that we particularly like are Charles Heidsieck and Joseph Perrier, spelled just like this, just like the stuff in the green bottles.
If you drink a lot of champagne, are you going to get more hungover than drinking other alcoholic beverages because of the sugar?
The sugar is not so much a factor in making you feel like you've had too much to drink, but it's really the bubbles that are driving the alcohol into the bloodstream more quickly. You absorb more alcohol more quickly when you're drinking a sparkling wine than when you're drinking a still wine. And it doesn't have anything to do with the sugar or the actual level of alcohol. It has to do with the way that it's being really literally pushed in to the bloodstream, being absorbed by the stomach.
And I must say, it's been my experience that maybe things do happen a little more quickly and a little more giddily with champagne. But the next day, I find myself in very good shape. If you have an all-champagne dinner, I think you'll have less of a hangover than with other things.
Even though it's getting to your bloodstream quicker?
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, so I really don't know why. But certainly, this is the legend about champagne. And certainly when you go to the Champagne region, this is what everyone tells you consistently, that you'll feel much better the next day. And it's been my experience that in this case, the PR people are right.
One last question. Will you be drinking champagne during the holidays, on New Year's Eve perhaps?
I'll be drinking champagne at David's house.
Oh, my champagne again, Josh. Yes. I do like to drink champagne at holiday time, but that's nothing unusual. I like to drink champagne year-round whenever I can afford it.
Right. Okay.
Well. I may be drinking the champagne of bottled beer.
Yes.
That's all I can afford.
Well, I want to thank you both a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Joshua Wesson and David Rosengarten co-edit the newsletter The Wine and Food Companion. There's an article about inexpensive Spanish sparkling wine, or cava, in this month's Atlantic magazine. We called the writer, Corby Kummer, and he told us about a taste test that he tried on some friends.
Well, I brought to a nice restaurant a bottle of very fancy, but not $100, $40 bottle of champagne, which is kind of the fashionable champagne among food professionals right now. You see it when chefs get together after a long night and they want to treat themselves to something. And I brought at the same time a $6 bottle of Freixenet Cordon Negro, the kind that comes in the black bottle. And we did a blind taste test. It wasn't rigorous, and it wasn't among food professionals. There were a couple people who lived in France for 2 years and knew their wines, but never bring a bottle of wine out from their cellar and tell you about it for 15 minutes before you get to eat the main course. They just like wine. And everybody preferred the cheap champagne. They thought it was clean and fresh and, I guess, undemanding, which might not be the very best thing to say for a wine, but in this case it seemed absolutely appropriate.
Why did you do this? What were you trying to prove?
Well, I guess I was trying to prove that you don't have that Spanish wine is made really carefully and really well, and so is Californian, and can compare quite well to a fancy $40 a bottle, or $20 to be franker about what a lot of champagnes cost. And you don't have to be ashamed of it. But I wasn't even that interested in holding it up against other French wines so that it could play with the big boys. I was just trying to prove what's good to drink, because champagne isn't drunk the way other wines are. You don't usually sit down and all conversation stops while you carefully test the champagne to see how it is. And then everybody nods at each other, waits for the most senior person to say what he thinks. It's usually in the context of a party. It's drunk with a lot of other things, and people don't pay all that much attention to it. They want it to be refreshing, good, stimulating, and festive. And cava, Spanish wine, is that very much. So are a lot of California ones. And you don't necessarily need the most expensive champagne to get all the virtues of champagne.
Okay, if you think this $6 a bottle stuff tastes pretty good, how do they make it that cheaply?
Well, they make it in huge quantities. because the Spanish wine industry was really casting about for something to make after a terrible blight that wiped out almost all of European wines, phylloxera, in the 1870s to 90s. And they thought, well, we have to recover. What can we do that'll make a lot of money? We'll copy France and Champagne, because we can grow grapes kind of like that. And we'll use the same methods they do, but on a huge scale. And we've got a lot more land, because we don't have to worry about this carefully, precisely defined region. We can grow them wherever they'll grow well. So they went into it just thinking of it as an industrialized product. And it's important to remember that that's what most champagne is. It just started in, really, most of Europe began drinking it in the 19th century in any real quantity, and in this century, too.
Well, you know, I was just speaking with the editors of a Food and Wine newsletter who suggested that if you want to drink an inexpensive Spanish cava, that the food to eat it with would be a spicy food, like Mexican food, for instance. What do you think of that?
I think that's good advice, and I kind of believe everything they say. I think they're terrific. I also think that people don't pay a lot of attention to what food they're having with champagne. They're toasting something. They're getting the evening off to a great start. It's going to be festive. One of the main reasons I wrote the article was because all of my friends, if they are bringing champagne to a party, will go out and buy a $7 or $10 bottle of champagne and hang their heads and sort of hide it. And once it's unwrapped or it comes out of the ribbon, they'll put it behind the French champagne or the stuff with a label that looks fancy and doesn't look Spanish. There's not a reason in the world to be ashamed of it. It's a perfectly fine and refreshing, and who knows what hors d'oeuvres are going to be served? Who knows what food is going to go with it? I think people don't usually pay attention to it. They just want something that will be brisk and get the evening off to a great start.
Well, Corby, I wish you happy holidays.
And you too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Corby Kummer is a senior editor at The Atlantic magazine, where he also writes about food.